Welcome to Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm your host, Cammie, and we're continuing our Now series, Narrating Ordained Women. I have with me today Amy Cartwright. She has a profile on ordainedwomen.org, and we're going to ask her just a few questions about that. So, Amy, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Amy Cartwright, as Cammie already introduced me. I'm a mother of two young children, and my husband received a job offer up here in Calgary, Alberta, so we are currently away from home. We're both Americans, and I grew up in the church. My father's side of the family has been in the church for a long time. My mother is a convert, and yeah, grew up very... in a very loving, wonderful ward, have had really, for the most part, good experiences alongside some harder experiences in the church. And yeah, it's been my Mormon identity is something that's very, very, very important to me and my faith. And also a struggle and desire for more understanding and knowledge.
Tell us a little bit, if you don't mind. Do you mind sharing some of those hard times in the church that you've had?
Sure. The first one that was kind of really hard for me was when, and I talked about this in my profile, when I was 19, I started attending a young single adult ward. And it was my first Sunday there. But I knew the bishop from, I was in one of his choirs that was kind of more of a, at a regional level. So he knew me before that point, and I came to the YSA ward that day, and I was just kind of having a hard day. I had recently turned down my acceptance to BYU in order to stay at another university, at a state university, and was feeling a little bit of guilt over it, a little bit of university guilt, I guess, or whatever. And so for whatever reason, I decided not to take the sacrament that day just because I felt like maybe I had made the wrong decision. And I was very, very, I was very in tune with how I felt. And so if I ever just didn't feel good about something, I would choose not to take sacrament. So I chose not to take sacrament that day. And when the bishop saw me after sacrament meeting, he asked if he could talk to me. And I figured it was maybe just a welcoming interview or something like that. And it kind of, but it did kind of catch me off guard a little bit. So I went to him after church, and he asked me why I didn't take the sacrament. And I just, told him that I was feeling kind of bad, that I felt like maybe I should have not done that. And I was feeling a bit of remorse. And I just wasn't feeling a spirit that day. So I felt to not take the sacrament that day. And he asked me if he could have, if he could give me a worthiness interview just in case.
And I was like, "Are you kidding?"
No, I'm not. He was just like, "Well, just to be safe, I'd like to just, conduct a worthiness interview." And I was like, "Okay." And so he started asking me some questions, and we went through all the questions, and he got to the question about the law of chastity. And to that point in my life, I had had bishops who that was the only question they'd ask. They just asked, "Do you live the law of chastity?" And I would say, well, I mean, when I was younger, of course, I'd be like, "I don't know what that is." But then as I got older, of course, I was a very, very, very chaste young woman. And so I was like, "Well, of course, that's not a problem. I haven't even ever kissed anybody." And so, but then he's like started asking a little bit more in depth. He was like, "Well, what I mean by that is, have you ever touched anyone in these inappropriate places, or had anyone else touch you, or have you ever touched yourself in these inappropriate places?" And I was so, I honestly was just so innocent and unaware that I was really taken back by those questions, and it felt very violating to me. And then, of course, as a young girl, like, I kind of didn't 100% understand what he was getting at, right? Like, right. I was like, well, like, a doctor, you know, like, I've had, like, a
good grief.
Woman's, yeah. Or a well woman checkup, or, like, what did he mean by this? And so I went home that day feeling really uneasy. And again, as I said, I was very, very, very kind of in tune with my emotions, mm-hmm. but also maybe driven too much by them, mm-hmm. as a young woman. And so because I felt uneasy, I thought that maybe I had done something wrong.
Oh.
And so I spent literally months going over this interview in my head, and I would go back and talk to him and, like, kind of try to ask him to clarify or be like, well, is this what you meant? Or, and I'm sure he probably thought that I was just nuts. Like,
right.
Because, I mean, I actually remember on one occasion him being like, I don't really understand what you're trying to ask me. And but I also didn't really understand what he was asking me. It was a very, very, very awkward situation. But in the end, it started getting to the point that I was literally having anxiety over it, like night sweats, not able to sleep, really terrible nightmares. Like, I lost my appetite. Like, it was really, really, really starting to affect me in an emotional way. And so I actually just stopped going to church. I moved out of my home up to this university. And this is after, like, this incident happened in, like, May or June of the previous year, and I don't feel like I really got to, I hung on for like 9 months, and then finally said, I just can't do this anymore. Like, I feel so terrible that I just can't keep going. And so I did. I stopped going to church for a little while, and I suffered. And so after about a year out of the church, I decided that it was time for me to come back. I was at a really low place in my life, and I felt like this was the right thing to do, so I did. And I had a really profound experience where I felt like I needed to return, and where I needed to make sure that the church was an active part of my life the rest of my life. There big thing that kind of has led me to look at my faith in a different way, and that is that and my husband and I have talked about this in other places, but my husband is gay, and when we were dating, I knew about this. He told me about this, and we both felt like, you know, it's God's will that we are married in this life, and that God will make this possible in our lives. If we just remain faithful, everything will be okay, and we will have this really lovely, wonderful marriage, so long as we stay faithful. And we were actually even in my stake president at the time, when we had our interview right before we got married, told us that he was like, if you remain faithful, I know that you two will change the world. And so, like, there's this big fanfare going in, and we had a really, really tough first year of marriage. And it was really, really hard. But we, you know, kept being like, this is what we're supposed to do, and this is what's right. And that lasted until probably about 2 years ago, when finally I was realizing we really needed some support. Here we were in this this difficult marital relationship, and we needed some help if we were going, you know, like, it's hard to be in the church in this kind of relationship. And so I went to our stake president and asked him if we could start up a support group in line with those who were in mixed orientation marriages, or those who were LGBTQ in the church, so we could start up a support group for those of us who wanted to stay active and faithful in the church, but were also really working through some, you know, some pretty heavy stuff. And I was told that the church would not be okay with us doing that, that they were worried about people hooking up, that it was inappropriate. And that was, for me, kind of one of my, I was still very Orthodox believing, but that was kind of the first moment where I realized that this problem had been created for us in a lot of ways, that we had been counseled into this marriage, and that, and now there wasn't any support.
Good grief.
From the church itself. And that was really disheartening to me.
Wow.
And then, of course, and then, you know, a while later, my husband and I just started reading more and more about the church and history and doctrine and things like that. And some things just didn't sit very well with us. And it, my husband and I would say, are both still, we're still believers in a fairly unorthodox way, obviously. But it's created this space where we're like, we have seen what it is when there's only, when not just men, but generally when there's one kind of man who is put into leadership positions in the church.
There's no other points of view that are that can address all the members of the church.
Exactly. There really wasn't anybody to advocate for, well, maybe we shouldn't be counseling people into these kinds of marriages, or maybe we shouldn't be asking young girls these questions, or maybe, you know, just lots of things. When I was in graduate school, I focused a lot on a lot of feminist issues because my graduate study was female bodies playing, well, women playing pants roles in opera. And so I focused a lot on the history of how we have looked at female sexuality and how that creates this tension for pants roles, right? And so as I was reading a lot of this feminist literature and a lot of this history to work on my graduate research, I realized that how we had talked about what makes a woman, or what qualities are womanly, or even like how we think about women's sexuality, like, for example, that we no longer believe that women are just inverted men. Lots of different things. It really opened up my mind to understand that how I was being taught about what being a woman was inconsistent with the history of humanity, that I was able to see this is what we believe women are right now, but this actually isn't eternal as much as I've been told that this is eternal.
You know, that's interesting. Did that lead to, and this will lead to this question, what, when and why did you decide to post your profile on Ordained Women? And did this lead into that kind of definition?
Do you know, in a lot of ways, I think it did. I mean, like, obviously, no one's path is very linear, right? Like, we kind of all weave in and out of things.
Sure.
For a long time, I was able to kind of just, like, separate those two things in my head, being like, well, yeah, maybe the way the church uses the word gender isn't correct, but it's okay. And it took me a long time to kind of be like, well, this has a lot of far-reaching implications, actually. I decided to submit my Ordained Women profile. It was last summer, and I was really at the precipice. I actually maybe was full head into what's, you know, being talked about all over the Mormon sphere right now about, I was in a faith transition, a faith crisis, and I was concerned and upset by some of the things that I read historically, but even more, I was upset and concerned by what I saw was treatment of women in the church. And this actually really became very strong to me that I needed to do something after visiting a woman that there's a family that we're good friends with, and they're in their 60s, and you know, they both grew up very, they raised their family in the church, very, very, very Orthodox family. And I was so surprised when I found out that this woman had left the church because she had always been such, you know, like that person that you like put up on the hill in your mind.
Right.
As super, super righteous, really good person, very knowledgeable, very understanding, wonderful, wonderful person. And so I was so surprised that she had left the church. And as I learned more about her story, I realized that it was how she was treated as a woman and as a woman in the church, and that that had really chipped away at things. And at that point, I realized that to me, it didn't matter so much. And I know that some people really push back on this, but to me, it didn't matter so much whether or not the church was true doctrinal wise.
Like, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that one more time? There was a noise that I made and it's going to be in that recording.
Sure.
So it wasn't so much, start with that part.
Okay. It wasn't so much history and kind of this understanding that, you know, our truth claims really are a little bit more, there's some legitimate challenges to them. Those really bothered me at first, but I was able to move past them and be like, you know what, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be, as a Mormon. Like, I'm not as bothered by these teachings as I was anymore, but now that I can see that there's some legitimate challenges to them, it opened up this sphere where I was like, well, if there are legitimate challenges, then I don't think it's right for us to treat people a certain way based on these challengeable truth claims.
Right.
And so, and again, as I heard her story, and then I started hearing hundreds more through the Feminist Mormon Housewives community and through other online communities, as I read more and more about women's experiences in the church, things like that bishop who had asked me those questions became, I realized that that wasn't, I wasn't just a random incident, that this was happening to a lot of women, and the issues of not, you know, of being in a mixed orientation marriage, like this was, again, I was not an anomaly. And so once you realize that you're not an anomaly anymore, you realize there's a problem. It's not just some random rogue leader or a philosophy in one area of the church. Like, this is obviously something that is a problem church-wide. And again, like through my graduate studies, I was like, patriarchy is a problem. Like, for so long I've said, oh no, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, the church is a good patriarchy. I was like, no, like anytime there is someone who is putting themselves over another, it's wrong. Like, and I actually don't even think that that's, I mean, Christ came to abolish these hierarchies, these, you know, these people who were in religious high places and things like that. And so I was like, I just can't, and no longer could I just say that everything was okay because, well, the church is true, so therefore everything's okay. I had to say, well, the church, like, some of the things I've been taught about the church might be true, but some of them are also untrue, and are very, there's plenty of historical evidence to suggest that how we talk about polygamy today, or how we talk about these individuals and their, like Thomas B. Marsh, like, this is patently false. And so if we can talk about how those things, if we can recognize that those things are false, and our constructions of them, then what's to say that how we talk about patriarchy in the church isn't also false? And as I had seen all these things happen in other people's lives and how it had hurt their testimonies and their lives, I felt very strongly, as I was driving away from this friend's house, so I was like, I have to put up a profile because, now I'm going to cry. As I was talking to her, she was like, things are getting better, Amy. And I said, I know And all I could say in my heart was, but they're not going to get better fast enough for you to see it. Mm. And that made me so sad. And I thought, I don't want my grandchildren to still be having to talk about and work at the things that I'm working at now that I see are a problem now. So I can no longer be silent. I have to know that I did my piece to help make things better. Mm. And I came home and posted a profile within a few days. It was pretty quick after that. So, and yeah.
Oh, that's neat. What kind of response have you had since you've done that?
From my family, they just don't really talk to me about it. Like, I tried talking to my parents a little bit about women in the priesthood before I put up my profile. Mm-hmm. And my father flat out told me that this was wrong and that I should never be talking about this. Mm-hmm. And talking about women in the priesthood was just wrong. And so obviously that was the end of our conversations. Mm-hmm, right. When my father saw some of the things I was posting on Facebook around the October action, he told me that he was so embarrassed that he didn't want to see those things. And so that was really tough because obviously this was something like I very much felt a spiritual prompting to do this and felt very moved upon and to just to have that so blatantly spoken against was really hard for me, especially as I told my father that I had really been having a hard time with my testimony around that time. And as soon as I put up my ordained women profile and started talking to people more and more about women's ordination, I really felt this huge lift off my shoulders. And I felt like I could feel God again. And I felt like I could be led by the Spirit again. It felt so good. Like, it felt so spiritful and
light
and light. Yes, I felt so good about it. And I told my dad, I was like, look, like, I was having a really hard time even like feeling the Spirit anymore, and here after I've submitted my profile, I feel it strongly again in my life. And I feel like there's purpose to my Sunday worship. Like, there's all, like, this is what will keep me in the church, just be feeling okay talking about this. And then he was like, well, that's the spirit of the devil. And I was just like, oh goodness. Well, and I mean, all I could say was, well, if the spirit of the devil is telling me to stay Mormon and is telling me that, you know, like, it's leading me in good ways, then I don't even know what to do anymore. Like, so that was really frustrating to me. Other than that, it hasn't been too bad. Like, my bishop and my priest leaders, they don't agree, but they've been really understanding about letting me have a safe place to come and talk about something, or like, there's been no suggestion that there'll be any discipline taken against me for putting up a profile or speaking about women's ordination. So, I mean, like, speaking online, obviously I'm not like having speaking engagements or anything. But talking about women's ordination, it hasn't been a problem. So I feel like that's a really, I'm really grateful for that.
Good. Good.
I've lost a few friends over it and that's really hard, but you have to be true to who you are and to what you believe. And that's something that I learned over and over and over again in young women's and in the church, is that, you know, you stand up for what's right, even if you're standing alone.
Yeah.
And so that's been hard, but I feel right in my heart.
Yeah.
And so I just have to learn to live with that.
And it's amazing what kind of good friends come along that take their place. So, Amy, what is your vision for this movement in the church? What do you see that is possibility, or what do you see that keeps you involved in ordained women?
see a church that's really trying really hard. I actually do believe that the church is trying to find ways to make women more visible and to give them more responsibility, and to create a greater space for these conversations. Even though sometimes it seems like that's not happening, I do think it is happening. And so I don't expect that women will be ordained tomorrow or even this year. I do believe that this is a bit of a marathon discussion, and I don't want to say fight because I don't see it as a fight, but it's a marathon of an ordeal.
Of an ideal, yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to happen overnight. I think that soon we'll probably start to see some callings that are currently only given to men, things like clerks and executive secretaries. I wouldn't be surprised if sooner than later those positions become available for women. I also wouldn't be terribly surprised in the next 10-ish years if women were reminded of their heritage of the laying on of hands for healing, and that was practiced again in the open. I do know that there are rogue women, not rogue women, but that there are some women who already do this. But I anticipate a day when that's not frowned upon. I do believe that there will be a day when women are ordained. And I hope that it's within my lifetime. I hope that it's within my friend's lifetime that I was talking about before. But I do think that it's probably a while in coming. In the church, we have traditionally moved rather slowly towards change. And so that's something I have to remind myself all the time, that this is something that's going to take a while, and that it takes a while for God to turn people's hearts and to be more understanding and receptive to that. For ordained women, the group, I really hope we don't have to exist forever. I hope that, you know, women are ordained and then ordained women doesn't have to exist anymore. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But I anticipate that we'll be around for a while and that we'll be continuing conversations and, you know, just conversations like we're having right now, Cammy, where we just talk about the things in our heart and why we feel the way that we do. And I anticipate that happening for a while. After women are ordained, I foresee it also being a while again before we see women who assume an equal place at the table. All patriarchies take a long time to dismantle. So yeah, that's something I have to remind myself when I get really discouraged, that this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And there'll still be people at the end cheering you on. Sorry.
I sure hope so. I hope that we cross the finish line someday.
Yes.
But until then, we'll keep going. And we've got a lot of really wonderful people in ordained women who feel very, very, very moved upon to ask this question and to be part of a group of people who stand up for saying what they think is right. So, and I'm ridiculously grateful to have found them in my life.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Amy, for sharing your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cammy. It's been really lovely.